Stephon Diggs gone but not forgotten in Buffalo. Thanks to social media activity, the social media sleuths out there checking out the likes column in the Stephon Diggs X page, see that he clicked the little heart next to a message from Big S G Worm, who said, "Bills low-key got the worst fan base, y'all bitter ASF," which means as F-K, in the comments. So, look, Bills fans upset about this notion that they've got the worst fan base that Stephon Diggs liked. Broader context is he was expressing condolences for the passing of Vontae Davis, who once played for the Bills, was playing for the Bills when he retired in 2018. And there was a lot of negativity thrown at Diggs. What a shock. People are negative on X. I mean, they're negative about everything. Anything and everything they're negative about. He was reacting apparently to the negativity by agreeing with the idea that they were being salty in the comments, but that post also said they've got the worst fan base. And look, I mean, you know, Bills fans already upset the guy's gone, and I guess the Bills themselves would kind of be happy about this because they're getting flack because they traded Diggs. If Diggs says something to anger the fan base and make them feel better that they made this move, then so be it. But it's just one of those little complications that can pop up. And social media, I mean, people want to dismiss its impact. We know that players use social media to make their points clear. Social media was the tool that Stephon Diggs used to get traded out of Minnesota. And we've been scrutinizing and looking for the real meanings of a lot of his messages in recent months. And this is one that, you know, Bills fans now see it. And it makes them more likely to say good riddance to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's again, one of those where I just go, gosh, I wish Stephon Diggs, you're above that. Just don't even respond to stuff like that. Why are you worried about it? Why are you going and searching through, you know, to see who's saying what? That's the first thing I want to say. You know, the second thing is the Bills fans, I think, yeah, they're bitter at Stephon Diggs. It doesn't matter whether it had something to do with the Vontae Davis tweet or, you know, him saying goodbye to the Buffalo fans or whatever. If you look at social media, the Bills fans kind of were like good riddance. I think their anger is only at the Bills that they feel like they didn't get more for the trade, right? I think that's where it is. But I think more than not, just reading the tea leaves out there and going through social media, gosh, I get the feeling the Bills fans in general are glad Stephon Diggs is gone. And again, some of those actions and things he did up there, not talking to the media and what he did, I think, yeah, it left a bad taste in their mouth there. You know, and then, you know, I think there's a side of them that feels like, yeah, he forced his way out of town there in Buffalo. So I think they are bitter. Now, I mean, listen, to say the Buffalo fan base, I will disagree with whoever the hell that was in the comments section there. It's one of the best fan bases in football. We know that. I mean, gosh, they've done so many incredible things where they've rallied together and raised money and do stuff like that or show up wherever or dig out the team, you know, from their house in a snowstorm. Like, it's kind of like, no, their fan base is awesome. So I won't let that go down all the way there. But, yeah, I mean, we don't need to drag Stephon Diggs in the comments section when he's saying RIP to a, you know, an NFL awesome player in Vontae Davis.
It's not an indictment of the Bills fan base. That's where you got it wrong. It doesn't matter what team it is. You're going to have people who respond
that way
social media. That's just the way it is. They are wired to always look for something negative. They want to get that little dopamine rush that comes from sticking it to somebody. And I finally learned how to navigate it a little bit. I'll give you an example. The other day, I posted a story on PFT about the comments from Kirk Cousins that he's going to do everything that he possibly can to help deliver a world championship to Atlanta. In the story, I raised the whole Tuesday thing. In the post on X, I didn't make a snarky comment about Tuesday. I just said Kirk Cousins vows to do everything in his power to bring a Super Bowl win to Atlanta. Now, I guarantee you this. If I had made a comment about working on Tuesdays in the post, all the responses would have been dragging me for being an ass hole. I figure the pause helps about pointing out Tuesday. So I didn't do that. So what were all the responses? Everybody was saying, except on Tuesday. He's not going to work on Tuesday. They all filled in the gap that I left because everybody is wired to be negative on X. It's just the way it is. If you're going to play in that playground, you got to understand that's how it is. And after 15 years, I've finally figured it out. Not that I'm going to incorporate that into my ongoing posting on X, but at least I understand what it's going to be. If you say the jerky thing in the post, all the responses are, you're a jerk. If you stop short of saying the jerky thing in the post, all the responses will be the jerky thing that you left out of the post.
It's very true. You are right about that. I never really thought about that. You're very right. I don't even know how to explain that. But yeah, that's part of X. Just the opposite. Let's argue whatever you said, the opposite. And that's where, yeah, I can't take X. I'm not on there much other than just to kind of scroll and get a feel. Because when I read, it makes my blood boil at times, or my brain want to blow up. Because I'm just like, what? How stupid? How mean? Oh my gosh, you're a loser! Whoa, your mom raised you to do that? That's what you've been tweeting? Whoa, your mom stinks! You're tweeting that? Like that's what I want to sit there. Yeah, I just can't.
And how many of those
it.
People, when you click back to their profile, the first thing in it is follower of Christ.
Oh. Always. There's always those people. There's hypocrisy everywhere. But yeah, I'm with you. And that's where, you know, I try to keep an arm's length on X for sure.
Pete says we're a little off track, but I have experienced the moments where your blood is literally boiling and you're like, I just want to go on there. And it's like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then part of me is like, go ahead and do it. But like, don't do it. Don't do it.
So, I know. Yeah, I know.
I have never taken advantage of your boiling blood to get you to do something that you might regret later. I always, when I'm aware of it, I try to keep you from doing something that's right. Which is ironic because I'm the devil on my own shoulder. And I think, unlike most people who have a devil on one and angel on the other, I got twin turbo devils telling me, go ahead, do it. See what happens. Screw them. Let's have some fun. Yeah, you're boring. Let's have some fun. All right. Another example of a potential misadventure on X, Caleb Williams, who's going to be the first overall pick in the draft. And there have been some weird things that have come up lately, and I've ignored most of them. And, he painted his nails. Oh, he's got a pink phone. Wait, people, shut up. Just shut up. He's still going to be the first overall pick of the Bears, and your assessment is he's going to be pretty damn good, and we both love talking to him in Indianapolis. He gets it. He's mature beyond his years. The Bears are going to get a potential winner here, the franchise quarterback they haven't had since Sid Luckman. So we got to set this up before we get to what Caleb did in response. Here's Greg McElroy on the This Is Football podcast with Kevin Clark sharing his concerns, because we all have to have a caveat, right? It can't be all positive. We got to have some caveat, I guess. Here's Greg McElroy's caveat on Caleb Williams.
The number one thing that concerns me most about Caleb Williams, I look at all the players that have been drafted number one, number two, number three, way up there near the top of the draft. And seldom are the guys that ultimately go on to become elite players. Every single one of them has a gigantic chip on their shoulder. Caleb Williams has never had that. I mean, Caleb Williams, from the time he stepped on campus at Oklahoma to the time he stepped on campus at SC, he has never experienced adversity. Very little adversity as far as how he was received and how he was portrayed as the next best guy. Even when they went 7-6 this year, or 6-6 or whatever, 7-5, it wasn't because of Caleb. I mean, he did his part, and he did. And a lot of that is true. But I do wonder about, is there a sense of entitlement? Is there that chip on the shoulder that's going to keep him going 10, 12 years down the road, the way it does Mahomes, who's still pissed that he got drafted 10th.
I understand the concept in theory. And again, you got to have something. You got to come up with some caveat. Like, everything's great, but is there? And it goes against the whole draft industrial complex, because as we get closer and closer to the draft, you're only supposed to say great things about all the players. You can't point out any possible negative. Greg McElroy went there, and I don't know that. I think Caleb Williams is going to find a way to get a chip on his shoulder. He's going to find a way to be properly motivated. He's already thinking about high level technique type issues, stuff that usually you're not consciously aware of and working on actively when you're coming out of college and entering the NFL. When we talked to him, I felt like we were talking to a guy who's been in the NFL.
Exactly. I'm with you there.
Know what I mean?
I'm totally with you. I talk to friends and people right away. I'm just like, guys, he's nuanced. He's a gym rat. You could tell he's thought about things a little deeper than some of the other guys we talked to about the quarterback position, right? There was real thought there to piggyback off what you're saying.
Now, if the nuance was lost when it was time for him to decide whether or not to react to what Greg McElroy had to say. Because frankly, and this is one of the realities of not having an agent. If you don't want to have an agent, that's your business. But if you have an agent who you communicate with on a regular basis and you have a good relationship with that agent and you rely upon that agent to give you advice, this is a situation where you can activate that relationship and say, you know, I'm really bothered by what Greg McElroy had to say. Now, what the agent can do is say, don't worry about it. I'll call him up and I'll tell him what's what, and maybe he'll go on somewhere else and have a different viewpoint. You know, I've said that before about Lamar Jackson. One of the reasons I believe he fell to number 32 in 2018, he had no one out there to push back against the Bill Polians of the world.
Yeah, right.
And the agents representing all the other quarterbacks that wanted to be drafted higher than Lamar Jackson were feeding that narrative. And he didn't have anyone to defend him, and he didn't defend himself. Caleb Williams doesn't have anyone to defend him. He chose to defend himself. I mean, my advice would have been, number one, let me handle it. Number two, don't you do anything. I don't want this to come off as disrespectful to Greg McElroy, but my reaction would have been, who cares what Greg McElroy says, right? Who cares?
Well,
he's Greg McElroy.
Well,
who cares? He has nothing to do with the NFL. He's a college guy. He's got nothing to do with the NFL. He's got nothing to do with your future. His opinion doesn't mean jack crap to you, Caleb. Don't waste your time even thinking about it. That's what I would have told him.
Yeah.
That's what I would have told him.
Yeah.
Don't do anything about it.
Right.
Okay? It's different if it's Chris Collinsworth who says it, or if it's Troy Aikman who says it, or Tony Romo, or Tom Brady, somebody who's going to be covering your NFL career and doing NFL games and part of the NFL narrative. This is a guy that's irrelevant to you now.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
Don't worry about it.
Right.
Don't worry about it. You're still a number one pick.
Yep.
Don't get dragged down by this negativity.
That's right. Small potatoes. Right. I hear you there.
Don't pick this fight.
Right. You're above that. You know, let people like us defend you or whatever else there. Right. I do think there's a little bit of a smear campaign with Caleb Williams going on right now. I do. You know, and again.
Why? Well, what's the point of it?
I
don't get it.
I don't really get it either. Maybe to try to get the Bears a little bit. I think there's, first off, as we know, the NFL, it can be conservative, we know. There also is factions within the NFL that's religious, right? And I will say that I think that part of the NFL is a little bit like, whoa, pink nails. Oh, he did this. So they're like a little bit like, whoa, I can't trust that. That's crazy.
He cried after a game.
Part of the NFL that's a little bit like, I feel like the old school, a little bit like, whoa, we only like our quarterbacks to be exactly like this, right? And that, so I think that's going on a little bit, no doubt about it, right? And then I think people have this thought of him for some reason that he's entitled a little bit because of, yeah, the way the year played out. He didn't play the bowl game. I don't know. Now, one, I would just say this, like, don't put yourself in people's shoes and talk about, you know, you don't know what they've gone through in life, right? All right. First, and then the second thing is, right, Oklahoma had him going there, having to supplant the guy that, you know, all the people in the world were telling me was going to be the number one pick in the draft, Spencer Rattler. Oh, wait, he overcame that. He beat him. Wait, transferring to USC after you have a great year at Oklahoma, that's not an easy thing to do and just go, wait, I'm going to go somewhere else and become the man, right? So that to me shows a little something there, right? There's rumors out there in the NFL world that, oh, some of the equipment guys or guys associated with the Oklahoma Sooners football program didn't love him. Like, you know, I don't know what to think with all that stuff. I know there was people down in Texas that didn't like me. They didn't like me because of me. They didn't like me because, you know, some of the people down there, I dressed like a black guy in baggy jeans and a jersey and some Timberlands, and they judged me like a book by its cover. And I had a faction of people down there that, oh, I didn't like him. He's from Jersey. He's a Yankee. So you can't believe all that.
You did show up in a limo your first day.
Hey, it wasn't a real limo. It was a bus, but shut up, you jerk. But either way, yes. But so, yeah, you're going to get judged with this whole thing. And then to push back on what Greg McElroy would say, it was like, what adversity did Trevor Lawrence ever go through? What adversity did Andrew Luck going through? Does somebody did show me something? What the hell are you talking about? Matthew Stafford, any adversity? What Peyton Manning? What was his adversity? I lost the Heisman? Like, get the hell out of here with that. Lamar Jackson, even to that, what was his adversity as a player? Right? I mean, again, it happened during the draft. I mean, before the process started, if we're right now, like, he had faced no adversity to that point. So that's where I don't, you know, agree with those assessments there. And the main thing is this. Do you notice how people, when they talk about Caleb Williams, it's never about on the field. It's always something else, right? And I think that kind of says a lot, too. It's never like, I have a problem with his rocket arm and his unbelievable playmaking. I have a problem with his unbelievable running skills and how he breaks people's ankles four times a game. I have a problem with he's one of the greatest scramblers I've ever seen in college football history. I got a problem with he moves in the pocket and feels the pocket as good as anybody I've ever seen and throws lasers like I've never seen before in my life, right? I mean, that you don't ever hear that. It's always, oh, his attitude, oh, he cried, oh, like, get out of here with all that crap. It seems very C.J. Stroudish from last year that there's just this group that wants to attack it, and I don't understand why.
And, you know, it may be a combination of hoping the Bears get wobbly and don't take him and maybe take somebody else.
Yep.
Or just, hey, you know what? The Bears are on the rise, and they're going to have this franchise quarterback, and let's start picking at it now. Let's start predicting why and how it's going to be a big failure. It's not going to work. Even though everybody thinks it's going to work, it's not going to work. He's not going to be as great as the Bears think. The Bears aren't going to be as great as people think. It's just not going to work, so the negativity comes from there. Apparently, Greg McElroy did mention that Peyton Manning's adversity came from not winning the Heisman.
Whoa, oh my God. How did he make it through life? He made it through life being in the Heisman second? I mean, are you talking about the adversity there? Man, how did Peyton Manning overcome that and become the all-time greatest quarterback ever? How did he do that?
He also apparently was a little upset that Ryan Leaf was actually in the conversation to be the first overall pick.
Damn it. That's what made Peyton Manning so mentally tough. It was all that. How could I forget that, like, hard life adversity that Peyton Manning went through there? Get out of here with that crap. That's crap. That's all it is. It's made up crap.
Yeah, none of these guys.
Motivating, sure, for Peyton.
I mean,
you know,
I don't want to say none. I don't want to say none. Right. But it's not really a storyline for college football, the adversity that guys are facing. You know, unless you come in as the seventh guy on the depth chart and you work your way up to starter or, you know, whatever the case may be. But it's more of an NFL thing. The criticism you take on a big platform from a lot of different people and a lot of different shows. And that's the adversity he's facing now. The guy who should be celebrated as the best player in this draft class, with no apparent flaws, with no apparent weaknesses, with no apparent problems, people are picking at the dumbest stuff to bring him down.
Right.
That's the adversity he's facing.
Right.
And if he's looking for a chip on his shoulder, it's all these people who are trying to find a way to bring me down at a time when they should be happy that I'm making it to the NFL, because it's a star-driven sport. As we've said time and again, it's a star-driven sport. We've had too many great quarterbacks cycle out. We need more great young quarterbacks cycling in. We need more great quarterbacks in the game. More guys we can celebrate. More guys we can market. More guys we can promote. More guys we can be fascinated by watching and learning about. That's what we need. And people want to knock him. So, look, bottom line, Caleb, we're with you 100%. My only concern is, and you'll look, I've fallen victim to this as well. Sometimes you just can't take it and decide to take matters in your own hands.
Yeah, we've all fallen there.
And have something to say. This is all a setup to say, Caleb, if we would have been giving you advice, we'd have said, don't do it. It's just Greg McElroy. It's irrelevant to your life moving forward. Ignore him. Ignore him. Don't give it credence. We otherwise would have no mention, no reason whatsoever to bring up Greg McElroy on this show ever. Ever. Especially not for anything he ever did in the NFL. Ever. So, Caleb Williams went to X and posted, let's go back to school again because I'm bored right now. Adversity, a state or instance of serious or continued difficulty or misfortune. One, didn't start freshman year. Two, popped hammy championship game first quarter, lost because of it. And then 3-7-5 my last year of college ball. And some would argue, I don't know, is not starting as a freshman, is that adversity? I don't know. I just think he would have been better off leaving it alone.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
I hear you there.
File it away
right.
And use it as your motivation. Use it as your chip on the shoulder that gives you that extra drive to put in the time, to put in the study, to make the full commitment to be as great as you can. I think he already has that anyway, but use the Greg McElroy criticism and all the pink phone and painted nails and cried after a game bullcrap to be the best player you can be at the next level.
This kid's a natural. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. He's a natural, and I think it bothers people, right? Because it's become, you know, he makes it look easy, right? He's one of the top recruits in the country, right? I mean, I know people who saw him play in high school football, and like, these are people I trust. Or they go, whoa, it was like a whoa experience, right? He went to the Elite 11 camp, and the whole camp was like, whoa, and he was the MVP of the camp, right? He goes to Oklahoma, and like we're talking about, it's Spencer Rattler, you know, all the unqualified people making qualified statements of the world are telling me he's going to the first pick of the draft, right? He overcomes him easily and just hits the ground running like, oh my gosh, he's awesome right away. And then just leaves the school and goes, hey, I'll go win the Heisman somewhere else. No big deal. Right. And I think that like bothers people that it's like, was that easy and he's that gifted to a degree. I don't really get it. I don't. But yeah, I think he's, you know, maybe not, you know, your exact. He's a little different in the fact that maybe artsy or whatever. I don't even know what to say, but it's things that I'm not willing to judge or care about because I've seen the human, been around him two different times now, and seen him play football and studied him hard to where, you know, I don't see what everybody would be picking apart so much. I think everybody's nitpicking and trying to find something and really trying to drag him down.
I think a lot of it is just some of that same basic resentment that we see from fans directed to players who have, number one, a high degree of God-given skill, and number two, they're doing everything they can to get the most out of it and having success every step of the way. People become jealous and resentful of that. And number two, you know, here comes a guy that's going to potentially transform a team that, other than the fact that they won the Super Bowl in 1985 and got back to it in 2006, have had 50 years of not great teams and not great results. And the Bears are a force now. And Caleb Williams isn't going to my favorite team, so I'm going to look for everything I can to knock Caleb Williams. I think some of that human nature creeps into it. We don't want the Bears to have nice things. We want the Bears to continue to stay bad. We don't want Caleb Williams to become a star player because that's going to disrupt the order of the National Football League. We don't want another Patrick Mahomes. It's tough enough competing with one. We don't want this guy to become another player that's going to dominate and make it harder for other teams to win championships. We're hoping that doesn't happen, and maybe we can manifest it by picking on all these negative things. Maybe that starts an avalanche toward Caleb Williams not thriving in the NFL. I mean, it's hard to psychoanalyze a whole fan base of, you know, folks who follow other teams, but I think part of that is kind of wishful thinking that it's going to end up being a failure.
Yeah, I think so too. You're right. I think it's probably baked into it a little bit too. The fear of what it could be and not wanting to see that potential, and yeah, for their own benefit, hoping it doesn't work because they don't want to have to, you know, the benefit of him being great and all that hurting their own team. I hear you there. I definitely think there's some of that.
You mentioned Trevor Lawrence earlier. He has faced some adversity recently, injury that caused him to actually miss game time last year. The Jaguars went from being in great position to make the playoffs to not making it at all. We're going to take a look at their draft needs along with the rest of the AFC South when PFT Live continues right after this.
This first week, it's about a building block. It's about creating a foundation. It's about establishing culture. Look, as a coaching staff and myself included, you know, we come out here, we try to have enthusiasm unknown to mankind. To get these guys to come back and want to be coached and want to be around us, we're just stacking bricks and stacking bricks until we build a wall that's strong.
Denard Wilson is going to get a cease and desist letter
seriously,
from Jim Harbaugh. That's his term. You can't do that. What's he going to say next? Who's got it better than us? Nobody? Come on, Denard, you got to come up with your own terms. You clearly want to. It's not that hard. Come up with a cliche of your own. That is property, legally copyright protected, of Jim Harbaugh, attacking the day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
He did work for John Harbaugh, right? So I think there's probably a little there where he's probably heard these type of things. And It's spreading. It's spreading, and he's giving, you know, he's giving love to Jim Harbaugh there. That's okay. So when he becomes a head coach, he'll figure out some of his own sayings that he needs to go with.
Here's the problem, yeah. Philosophical problem with that. If you have all these people who are now attacking the day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind, that enthusiasm becomes known to mankind, so therefore it becomes more difficult. You have to have even
better
more
level it up.
Enthusiasm
better level it up.
Because you've got all these people attacking it with enthusiasm that was previously unknown to mankind. It's now very well known to mankind. So yeah, it's time to take it to the next level. We need even more enthusiasm. You need to be more enthusiastic about your enthusiasm to properly satisfy the Harbaugh standard. Okay. Titans, that is the team that Denard Wilson now works for under Brian Callahan, the new head coach in Tennessee, replacing Mike Vrabel. The Titans cannot leave the 2024 draft without addressing what need Christopher.
You know, you look at them, I don't know if there's anything that just pops to you where you go, oh, they're desperate, right? It's a well-rounded roster. I think the biggest thing you look at and why we hear, I mean, tackle is certainly something to think about. I think that's a position there that's, you know, still an unknown, right? You know, you look at it right now, there is Dillard, right? He was there. I don't think he impressed them so much to where they think he's a long-term answer there. They got the big guy, Nicholas Petit-Ferret, right, from Ohio State. They drafted a few years ago. Do they think he's a long-term? There certainly seems to be a void at tackle. That's why I think everybody has Joe Walt going there at number 7, right? So I certainly could see the tackle's got to be something addressed at some point, either at 7 or 38. I think that would be the big thing I would look at. And then after that, Mike, you know, again, and maybe another edge rusher to go along with a Harold Landry if they want to look at it that way, right? Running back, they're okay. Wide receiver, again, could they add some depth and some other people? DeAndre Hopkins getting up there in age, we know that, but it's him, Treylon Burks, and Calvin Ridley. Yeah, I kind of look at it as like offensive line tackle specifically, and then maybe another defensive line difference maker, edge guy, right? Because they got Arden Key over there, opposite of Harold Landry.
I'm always going to be a big proponent of beefing up the offensive line when you've got a young quarterback who
are
trying to evaluate to see what his ceiling is.
It's the Callahan family.
He's got that, right? He's got that inclination to run the ball. And remember last year at some point, Vrabel had to show him video of all the quarterbacks getting blown up by being a little too stubborn with their efforts to run the football when maybe they should have just hit the deck or gotten out of bounds. So you want to keep Will Levis healthy so we can just see what he has. You look at their roster. They're low-key pretty good.
That's what I mean.
It's just a question of keeping everybody healthy.
Yes, right. So you look at it and you go, well, there's not huge holes here, right? There's not. There's not one thing you look at like we've had some teams where you go, like, this has to be addressed. There is an issue. I think clearly tackle is that position when you just look at the one area to go, wait, there could be a clear upgrade there. Right, and I think that's why everybody's got Joe Walt penciled in. Plus, you add in the fact of the things you're talking about, young quarterback, and then it's, hey, it's Bill Callahan's the offensive line coach, right? He's one of the best O-line coaches in the history of football. You would think he'd want to probably improve that unit, help that young quarterback, help out his son, the head coach, with a running game and make life a little easier that way. I think that's the big thing I look at. But, yeah, nothing glaring, right? You know, middle linebacker maybe is another area to look at. They lost Shazier, right, to the Texans in free agency. They signed Kenneth Murray. Right. So, yes. And Kenneth Murray, not for a big time contract. He's kind of been a disappointment as far as first round picks are concerned. So I could see middle linebacker being another area they need to address. It's not a great middle linebacker draft. I don't think you're going to find anybody that's going to help your team out immediately.
You mentioned receiver as well. DeAndre Hopkins closer to the end. Calvin Ridley, the big addition they had in free agency. Treylon Burks is the guy. This is year three.
This is up or out, basically,
for him. And the new offensive coordinator said yesterday he's going to have to earn his opportunities. Nothing is going to be handed to him just because he was the first-round pick that replaced A.J. Brown when they did the neck twitch trade a couple of years ago on the first night of the draft.
The neck twitch trade.
In hindsight, Vrabel was exactly right. You drafted a guy who became a great receiver. It's time to pay him. Instead of paying him, you're going to trade him for the first-round pick that you used to replace him with, and there's no guarantee that guy you draft is going to be as good as the guy that you shipped away, and that's what's happened. Treylon Burks has not filled the shoes of A.J. Brown. And part of the reason is you put a lot of pressure on the guy coming through the door to be A.J. Brown. Young guy coming in, hey, it's not just go be the best player you can be, go be A.J. Brown. Well, I'm just getting started. What am I supposed to do? This is the year where he needs to do what he can do to earn his spot long-term on the Titans roster. All right, let's pivot to one of the rivals in the division, the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts cannot leave the 2024 draft without addressing what?
You know, they're another team, a little bit like the Titans, where you go, damn, there's a lot of good, right? I'm not sure if there's a ton of, like, sizzle where you go, ooh, wow, I wish they maybe had, you know, a few more playmakers or difference makers, but you don't look at anything and go, oh, there's a glaring hole here, right? I mean, damn, you look at them and go, hey, receivers, not bad. I mean, we know it's a pretty good group there. Alex Pierce, Michael Pittman Jr., and Josh Downs, damn. Tight ends ain't bad. We know the running backs are pretty good. Offensive line, Chris Ballard's got that pretty much shored up for the most part, right? I mean, so there's nothing there. Defensive line, you know, again, would they could maybe want another top-tier pass rusher, but damn, they got Samson Ekubom. They got Kwity Paye, who they drafted in the first round. D tackles DeForest Buckner. Linebackers aren't bad. I come to it, I'm saying all this stuff just because I come to it, middle linebackers aren't bad with EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin. They're good players. I kind of look at corner to be the spot where I look at it and go, I don't think there's a ton of talent there, let alone, you know, they play that Seattle scheme, right? That it always bothers me a little bit, but, and you look here, right? I asked Pete to go, Pete, look it up. Well, they led the league in cover three, right? And, you know, to me, it's, again, the league's caught up to the Seattle scheme. You can't play it all the time. There's got to be variations. And they're a team that I would look at to go, can you play some man-to-man every now and then? So that's where a corner looks like, to me, the most spot that is voided in their roster. And I think they need a little upgrade in that department.
Yeah, Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator there, one of the masters of the cover three. 46% of the time they used it last year, according to the numbers Pete dredged up. So I agree with you there. Look, I've said this about a few teams, but yeah. I think it's a very important thing.
Right.
Anthony Richardson is the starting quarterback.
Yep.
He was injured multiple times last year before he made an exit for the balance of the season.
Right.
In comes Gardner Minshew. Different quarterback, different skill set. Different player, different playbook. This year, who's the backup? It's Joe Flacco. Completely different to what Anthony Richardson brings to the table. You need a developmental backup who is closer, not in ability, because Anthony Richardson was a top five pick for a reason, and he's got unlimited potential, and he can be a superstar in this league. We got a little taste of it last year, but not nearly enough, and then by week five, he's gone and forgotten, and we move on with the players who are there. That happens every year. This guy can be special. You need to have a long-term viable, and long-term means, you know, 3-4 years at most, because that guy's going to end up going somewhere else and playing if he's any good. You just need to have that insurance policy of someone who can be groomed into, I believe, a backup who is closer in skill set, just like what the Ravens have with Tyler Huntley behind Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
Anthony Richardson needs to have a backup who isn't mobile, stationary pocket passer, although Joe Flacco did surprise us a little bit last year with his mobility. You just need the offense, because you got to think about the other 10 guys. When the quarterback's out, the more the offense runs like it does when the starter is in, the easier it is for everybody else to make the transition. And Richardson to Flacco is not going to be the smooth kind of transition if they have to make it. And until Anthony Richardson goes 17 weeks and 17 starts, you have to be ready for the possibility of flipping the whole offense over to something else.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's real. I mean, what you're talking about is real, right? You know, I think what happens a lot of the times is you go, hey, wait, we would like that guy to continue the offense, but there's no guy out there that maybe we trust to actually be the backup when we got to put him in. So, let's got a guy like Flacco. At least we trust him. We won't be able to do this phase of our playbook. We'll have to go a little bit to the Gardner Minshew phase like we saw last year and go that way. It's not exactly what we are, but at least we know he can play and make big throws and do all that. Right, rather than, wait, this guy is like Anthony Richardson, but we haven't seen him play, he's a little raw, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what happens sometimes with these type of teams with this type of offense, right? They got Sam Ellinger behind Flacco. He's kind of like that. And that's probably why he's still there, because he can be, you know, Anthony Richardson light, right? A Natty Light version of Anthony Richardson there. But, yeah, I hear you, Mike, and I think that's a real thing. But, yeah, you look at them and you go, wow, you know, it is – the roster's good. And, I mean, we should know that. They're competitive. They're in it every year. We know that. To me, it's like – I don't know, Mike, if you have the same thoughts. It's just a little bit like – you know, damn, a lot of good. I feel like they're missing, you know, just a playmaker or two. Some guys that can do some extraordinary things, right? That's where I feel like I just don't have that feel for the Colts, that there's those guys or enough of those guys on their football team right now.
And you have even more reason to look for a guy like that this year because of the change to the kickoff, where you can use that dynamic playmaker in that setting and as part of your offense as well. By the way,
yeah,
you mentioned Sam Ehlinger.
Right.
If Greg McElroy were trying to identify the adversity that Ehlinger dealt with as a youth, there's one very obvious, very obvious.
He had a bad role model.
He had a very bad, he had the worst possible role model. He's the one that, when he was 2 years old, I'm Chris Sims.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Your career was all downhill from there, Sam. You screwed yourself. No wonder you're third string and holding a clipboard in the NFL. You're just like me.
You really are.
You really, you did it. You're just like Chris Sims. You're backup quarterback trash. Way to go.
Oh, God. All right. Let's go ahead and take a break on that. Nope. When we return, the rest of the AFC South, after we do a closer look at the Josh Allen contract that was agreed to yesterday. That's next here on PFT Live.
Job not done yet, you know, and that's why I want to tell the fan base, like, I'm extremely blessed and honored to get this paycheck or to get these checks, but I have to, you know, I still set goals for myself. I was defensive player of the year is my next goal, winning a Super Bowl, being the MVP of it. My sister has won a professional championship, so she's up on me. I think about this all the time. I know I'm super competitive. So I got to win a Super Bowl and be the MVP, and I could be up on. And I'm not going to stop until I get that. So, you know, that's motivating me. That's bigger than money.
Jaguars pass rusher Josh Allen referring to his sister, Maisha Hines Allen, who won a WNBA title with the Washington Mystics in 2019. So he wants to have a ring at the dinner table, just like Jim Harbaugh wants that NFL ring. He's got the college ring to go along with John's. He wants that NFL Super Bowl ring at the table, the professional championship. By the way, Chris.
Yeah.
The Indiana Fever, the team in the WNBA that is going to draft Caitlin Clark very soon. 36 of their 40 games this year will be nationally televised. That is what you do when you want to market your stars and elevate your sport. My only criticism is 8 of the games are ABC, ESPN, or ESPN2. The rest are other networks. I would get maximum games on ABC, ESPN, or ESPN2 if I was the WNBA of Caitlin Clark. Take advantage of it. This is the time to try to do to the WNBA what she did for college basketball.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that. I mean, again, I mean, it's the notoriety of women's college basketball. I don't ever remember it this high, right? I mean, we saw it with the viewership ratings, all of that. I mean, all the years with, you know, the great teams of UConn and the Tennessee Lady Volunteers and all of that, winning national championships, never was the attention to the sport like it was with Caitlin Clark this year. I mean, it brought it to another level, so... yeah, good job by the WNBA there.
And good job by the Jaguars and Josh Allen getting this deal done. Now, when it first broke yesterday, 5 years, $150 million, $30 million a year. Wow, $30 million a year. That's damn good. It's also not real. And we see this all the time. What happened was they took the incentive package, which requires to max it out and make it $30 million a year. Every year, it requires 17 and a half sacks, and Pro Bowl or first team All-Pro.
No big deal.
Pro.
Just 17 and a half and a Pro Bowl. No big deal.
Just fall out of bed and you get your $30 million a year. And it's not $30 million a year. And look, it's amazing how many people don't care about that. But what happens is the people whose existence is premised on getting that text from the agent and rushing to Twitter know they're being lied to and they just don't care. Because if they hesitate, they lose the race to be the first to post it. And if they start asking questions, they don't get the information at all. they aren't on the text, if they're not willing to pass along the periodic or more often BS about these numbers to their audience, they don't get it. So, I mean, I point this out because, number one, the right number is 141.25 million, 28.25 million per year, not 30, not 150. And also, I pointed out because the people that you are supposedly trusting for accurate information are deliberately lying to you and you just don't care about it. And I'm here to point it out. That's all. Not trying to be a jerk. I'm just pointing out that these people are lying to you and they don't care. That's it.
That's very nice of you. You are a jerk, but that was very nice of you.
It's a public service.
That's right. Way to go. Way to go. You make up or you're a little less of a jerk today, okay? So I'll give you credit there. But no, I hear you. I mean, you and I are on the same page of this. Here's what I am interested with, right? And, you know, we talked and I brought this up yesterday. We brought it up earlier in free agency, right? I do think, like, maybe the Texans started this with Nick Caserio a little bit. I think he's a little bit of the head of the curve with all these 1 and 3 year deals we've seen. That's the first thing that I think jumped out to both of us in free agency. Look at this, right? I think teams are looking a little bit like, hey, short-term contracts, we can balance the, you know, the salary cap and our checkbook a little easier that way than trying to project 3 and 4 years from now with what this contract might be and all that, right? The other thing, too, is seeing contracts like this that are more front-loaded, right? I think that's kind of interesting as well. I mean, the fact that he is going to make, more than $30 million the first 2 years of the contract, right? That's rare. Yes. It used to be the other way around. It used to be, hey, here's some okay numbers at the start, and then, like you said, Tyreek Hill crazy numbers at the end of the contract where it's like, they'll never see that money. It doesn't matter. This is a little different, right? And I'm guessing it's the same type of thing of – wait, we don't want to kick the can down the road. We know what we're dealing with right now. We'll get him his chunk of money. And then, you know, where it goes after, right, you know, we won't be hitting on the head quite the same way if we do want to get rid of him after year three of the contract. But I also like it from the player standpoint and the fact that I think he can see totality of this contract, you know, in a lot of ways too with the way it's structured. And I think that's pro player in a lot of ways as well.
There's $68 million total over the first 2 years, and then it drops to $23 million in year three, 24.75 and 25.5. The only downside to this, though, is you get into years 3, 4, and 5.
Right.
The big money has been cashed.
Yes.
And you look at what you have left, and you look around
that
at the rest
be
of the
problem.
Market.
Right.
You look at the salary cap, right. And you're thinking, man. So, look. It's
but what if?
It,
well, let me just throw this scenario. But what if you're now? Wait, I'm still really good, right? But I'm getting like 9.5 sacks a year, right? Now, wait, that number's not as big, and I'm not up in that class. Wow. But now the team might actually keep me because, hey, it's 3 years down the road and 23, 24 million for 9.5 sacks or 10 sacks a year. That's damn good. We'll keep you, right? So that would be the other side of the story that I think about protecting the downside of the player, too.
There's a sweet spot where you want to be making enough so that you feel like you're being properly compensated and not so little that the team has no intent. Why are we going to redo this deal? I mean, you don't want them to rip up the contract, but you also don't want them to sit there and think, oh, man, what a deal we did. This guy's screwed. This guy, you know, we got this guy for the next 3 years and we've got him at a great deal and we're not going to give him a new contract. All right. Are we still doing the draft needs? It looks like they disappeared.
Damn right we are.
Jaguars draft needs.
This draft needs time, baby.
My computer is on the fritz. The Jaguars can't exit the 2024 draft without addressing what, Chris?
Well, I look at the Jaguars, and again, we were kind of talking off air right during the break, right? The AFC South, when you look at it as a whole, you go, it's four teams that are pretty well-constructed rosters, right? You know, I'm not saying they're perfect. It's not wow at every spot, but there's like, it's four teams where I look at it and go, there's not like glaring issues or you got to go, whoa, if they don't address this, they are screwed for the year, right? So the Jaguars, a lot of good things. The things, one, just off the bat, I think they could use a speed receiver, right? I don't think it's a necessity. But when you talk about Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Gabe Davis, that's not the fastest crew in the world, especially when you talk about Zay Jones and Gabe Davis. That's not scaring anybody. Right. That's like, hey, they're going to be, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 yards. They're not going much farther down the field than that. And Christian Kirk, who can do that, he's not known to be just this crazy burner that way either. So I think they could use that. But most importantly is the corner position. The corner position, I think, has to be addressed here. Right. They got one of my favorite corners in all of football in Tyson Campbell, who is phenomenal. But he was, you know, had a few injury issues last year. They just signed Ronald Darby, who we know there is up there in age, right? So it's not only for the future, but for depth and, you know, some younger bodies there. I think corner is the number one position I look at for the Jags that they need to address in the draft.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Look, they thought they were keeping Calvin Ridley until the Titans swooped in. They were trying to play it cute, trying to avoid the upgraded draft pick to the Falcons by not signing him before the start of the league year. And then the start of the league year came along and Calvin Ridley ended up taking the offer that the Titans made. So they're in a little bit of a hole there. And there's pressure on this team because just like the other teams in the division, they are good. They underachieved last year. And, you know, yesterday when we were doing the Bill Belichick destinations, one thing that occurred to me after we finished that draft, I think the Jaguars are a potential place as well because I could see Shad Khan, who has cycled through plenty of coaches and general managers during his time owning the team, I could see him thinking, you know, I could go all in with Bill Belichick. I mean, he had Tom Coughlin there, a Belichick-style executive when he was running the whole show. He got smitten by Urban Meyer.
Yep.
I could see him become smitten by
Doug
Bill
Marone
Belichick.
Doug Marone was that kind of guy from that school. Be. Right, right, that school of coaching. I hear you there. I'm with you. Hey, the Jaguars, I'll say, if we could just bring up their free agency thing once again, it's pretty damn good. They filled in some holes here. They made their O-line better. If they could stay healthy at tackle, that would be a big deal, right? But the upgraded center, and then their front seven, the 49ers releasing Eric Armstead and them being able to sign him to go along with, you know, Trayvon Walker, the middle linebackers they got there. You know, they got something special. They got some good pieces there where Bill Belichick would go, ooh, the Jaguars aren't so bad. Maybe I will think about that.
Let's take a break. We'll look at the Texans' draft needs when PFT Live continues right after this. Welcome back to PFT Live. It's a Thursday edition, and there are the notable additions for the Houston Texans, who are proving to the other team in Texas what it means to go all in. One team says it, the other team does it. Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, are you kidding me? First time ever a team has added a 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard receiver, and a 10-plus sack edge rusher.
And Ezekiel Shire, the middle linebacker, who's awesome. He's not even on that. So we didn't have a big enough graphic to put some of the guys
in the graphic.
I know.
You don't even get a picture on the graphic for crying out loud. All right. What must they address, if anything, in the 2024 draft?
Yeah, I mean, another well put together roster, right? I think there's two areas you look at to go, you know, future, could infuse some young talent there, right? Offensively, there's really nothing to look at. I mean, their O-line, you know, maybe they want to guard for the future for to replace Shaq Mason, but it's one of the better younger O-lines in all of football. All right? I mean, we know receiver and running back are good. Quarterback's out of this world. Defense, you get into that, I think it's just two spots there. And neither spot is like, oh, wow, they're not good there. But they're filling it in right now with what I would call value signings. Veterans who, yeah, can play, not demanding a lot of money, right? And that would be corner, right? Corner as in the nickel, right? Desmond King, who's up there in age a little bit. Jeff Okuda, who's an unproven commodity. Right, they got guys there a little bit that it's like, hey, we'll try. We'll see if it can work out there. And D tackle, it's kind of the same thing. Denico Autry, a hell of a player, but again, up there in years a little bit. There's not a lot of young youth there in the interior part of the D tackle position there for them. Mario Edwards, they signed Tim Settle. Again, guys that are older, been there, done that. But I think those are two positions I look at to where they can infuse some young talent in there.
You're definitely onto something with cornerback. You've got Jeff Okuda penciled in as a starter at the right corner position.
With C.J. Henderson behind him is also a disappointing first-round pick, right? So, yeah.
You're going to have a pass rush that is good enough that you and I could be the corners on that team because the quarterbacks aren't going to have time to throw. But still, on the rare occasion that Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter don't hurry the quarterback, you're going to have guys potentially more likely to be open when you're facing some of the great teams in the AFC. And also, you look at their schedule this year. They've got some tough games.
It's a different
great
animal
teams
this year.
With great quarterbacks. Right. And they are going to be the hunted this year. And they are going to be on big platforms when we get the schedule coming up here in a few weeks. Let's take a break. When we return, it looks like Maurice Hurst and the Browns aren't going to Brazil after all. We'll talk about the The one game that we know, the one game of all 272, there is one that we know. We'll talk about that next here on PFT.
You ruined it, Maurice Hurst. You ruined it.
If you were organizing the room vacation, where are you going? You're the party.
I mean, if we're doing a cruise, I mean,
what if everything's on the table?
Anything's on the table. I mean, we're playing in Brazil this year, so I mean, we could do a
Rio.
Trip. Yeah, just a little Rio trip out there.
I don't know how that would look.
Can we be honorary defensive linemen? I'd like to go to Rio.
Somebody gave Maurice Hurst false information. He said it as if it was a done deal.
You blew it.
Browns going to Brazil. Sorry, Maurice. It's not the Browns. It's the Green Bay Packers at the Philadelphia Eagles on Friday, September 6th. First ever regular season game in Brazil. Streaming on Peacock, by the way. The night after the Chiefs kick off the season at home against an opponent to be determined.
We'll be
one out of the 272 games. We know. So we're going to Kansas City. We're flying to Brazil. And then we're going to Connecticut.
Damn, get the private plane rubbed up, NBC. Let's do it, baby. I want the big private plane to go to Brazil. I need to be comfortable. I need to take a little nap. I need the pregame.
I don't have a passport, so if they expect me to go to Brazil, they better tell me so I can get my passport.
You don't have a passport? I mean, what are you, 4 and a half? Like, what are you? You don't have a passport?
Listen,
jeez.
I didn't grow up with a silver spoon up my butt. We didn't travel to Europe when I was 7 years old, unfortunately. So I have had no need for one. Now, It's on the list of things to do because we want to go to London and the rest of the UK and Scotland and Ireland and every place over there. I really want to do that.
You got to get down to the Caribbean. You got to do all those places. They all take passports. I'd love to go down to the Caribbean and hold you under the water for a few seconds and throw you under the water.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'd love that. That you're really making it enticing. You're making it very enticing. The last thing I ever want to do is be near an ocean with you around. That is the one thing that is not on the bucket list for me.
I am
that is the
famous
thing where I will hit you with a bucket if you come close to me.
Thank you.
No way is that Thank attractive. You. So anyway.
It's
anyway.
Awesome, though. This is awesome.
And people are still asking me, how can the NFL do this on Friday night? I thought they couldn't play games on Fridays, like during college football season and high school football season. It doesn't kick in until the second weekend in September. So whenever Memorial Day... Whenever Labor Day lands in a way that the first Friday in September is the Friday after Labor Day, and that's when it's on the first, second, or third, that's when the NFL can play and televise a Friday game, and they can also do a Saturday game. It's kind of like they've discovered plutonium by accident again. I guarantee you now, every year that first Friday of football season is the first Friday in September, we're going to see a game. And I bet they'll think about playing a game on Saturday as well, that opening weekend, on the weeks where it's the first weekend in September.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. This is monumental, though. This really is cool. Bring up the graphic again. I mean, it's Brazil, right? I mean, it's the Eagles. We know how awesome they are. The Packers are one of the best franchises, you know, in history, right? You know, it's cool. I mean, I really am excited to see what it looks like. And how could you not look at this right here and go, love hurts. Yeah, yeah. Love hurts. How many times will I make that joke before the game? I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
One is too many.
Yes.
Do you remember who's the group that sang that song? You can't quote that song if you don't know the group that sang that song.
Adam Sandler and Wedding Singer. That's who I know.
Okay. Jay Giles Band.
Oh, okay.
Jay Giles.
All right. I'll give them the
credit.
Back
in my day,
yeah.
Jay Giles.
All right, Jay
Not
Giles.
J-A-Y, J period Giles
oh,
Band.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
All right, I think it's Jay Giles. Now Pete has me doubting my Jay Giles trivia knowledge. I'll check it out during the break. When we return, the Browns aren't going to Brazil, but Nick Chubb, their star running back, is staying in Cleveland. We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
Love hurts.
Are we back? We are back. Pete, One of the most important parts of your job is to tell us when we're back.
It's the second segment in a row. He didn't tell us we're back.
He didn't tell us we're back. Thank God I haven't said anything for which I could be fired. Maybe that's what Pete's trying to engineer. Anyway, Love Hurts is sung by Nazareth, not Jay Giles' band. But Chris was singing Love Hurts to the tune of
Love Stinks
by the Jay Giles band.
So we were both kind of right.
All
right.
And kind of wrong.
Kind of fits, you know, fits my profile. Combining two things and mixing it up or messing it up, it becomes a cynicism there, right?
And I do recall in The Wedding Singer, he was singing Love Stinks, not Love Hurts.
You're right. He was. You're right. Yeah. He definitely was. I mean, once I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, damn, I've been thinking about the wrong one. So I'll work on my Love Hurts lyrics and I'll break them out after the long weekend. I'll bring them out for you on Monday.
And by the way, the news we were supposed to discuss in this segment, Nick Chubb, Browns running back, agrees to a deal where he reduces his salary, $11.75 million. They haven't said how far he reduces it. He can earn it back in incentives. It's all coming from the fact that he's due to make a ton of money. He's coming off of a horrible knee injury. His money isn't guaranteed. This is the way to stay on the team. It stinks for him.
It stinks.
But you know, that's how it goes when you have the non-guaranteed out years of a contract.
No, it is. It's another example of brutal to be an NFL running back. One of the best in the game gets kind of a cheap shot. Now he's hurt. Now he doesn't make that money. It stinks.
Thanks for some of your time on Thursday. It's Chris's Friday.
See ya. I'll work hard tomorrow. I'm out of here.